Welcome in another week, another edition of the BS and Beers podcast. We're recording from our studios in New House Court after a month fighting COVID. I think, though, we only missed the show, right? We only missed the show. I think I do feel bad from doing all season, you don't record all the time. But we always pretty reliable to get to regular season.
Now,
week in the hospital,
recording live, it's the BS and Beer podcast crew with your host, David Romero.
For about a month, and it is time to catch up. So if you guys hear me, I'm still trying to catch my breath. So,
you know what it is, Dave? Somebody did not wear their mask while they were listening to the show like we told them to last time. That's what happened.
I took to heart all those jokes about licking the door handles over at Walmart. And I was up for the challenge. You know, you got some people that do the plank or they drink in the, all these challenges. Yeah. I did the Walmart door handle licking and lost. I lost that challenge. So anyway, but I'm just getting back on my feet. I feel good. It's hard to feel good after that, that game. Yeah. I mean, listen, after the Packers game, and don't get me wrong. I want to say, and I wish I like having my thoughts recorded. So that I never come across as a guy saying stuff. Oh, well, yeah, you know, but I was excited after the Packer game.
Yeah.
There were things that happened in that game that made me a little nervous, made me worried. And then I think to myself, maybe we could have done it. We just didn't have to. And that's what you hope for. But when I went into the season, I had several concerns during the preseason. Several of those concerns were, you know, resolved. I felt good about them. The one that has never truly been resolved is the wide receiver, or maybe playmaker in general, you know? So outside of Kamara, there's nobody out there as a proven playmaker. And then I'm like, okay, we still got Smith. He's at least done it. Then he goes to injured reserve. Yeah. So now we're sitting here with this depleted receiving core playmakers. And while I'm going in this direction, I'm going to back off for a second because I had this note written down. And this is where I want to start it. I believe that everything just caught up with us. You have a team that was displaced because of a hurricane. Ida sent the team to Texas, bouncing around, finding a place to practice. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden you have these injuries that we went into the season with. You have some more injuries after week one. You have, if I'm not mistaken, 6, maybe 7 starters from week one, and it's not included, or maybe it is included, and I'd have to do the math again. These players that were impact players, the difference makers, starters on a very good defense out in week two.
Yeah.
So then, again, the injuries, the relocation, the hurricane. But the biggest thing, and this is where I want to start the show, is the coaches. I know the coaches sit in the background. We don't really pay attention to them the way that we do a playmaker, you know, a linebacker that gets 12 sacks. But these coaches are so important. And I'm not saying this in a way to talk to the audience and tell them how you didn't appreciate them. I'm talking to myself as well.
Right.
If they didn't need 20 coaches, they wouldn't have 20 coaches. And I think to me, the biggest takeaway from this entire game, and we'll still have a show, but that makes me want to just throw a lot of this out. Not that we don't still have issues, but when you didn't have the coaching right off the bat, all the little things that you need to pay attention to out the window, all those little things that need to be coached up, that need to be brought to somebody's attention, the little things like, no, we want to make sure that we're 7 yards from the sideline when this happens with this particular receiver because of his ability to do that. All that goes out the window.
Right. No, I agree. I agree completely that this is the first time that I've probably realized just how important some of those, I don't want to call them lesser coach, but, you know, you obviously think of the head coach, you think of the coordinators or whatever. But, man, getting down, you know, all, whether it's an offensive line coach, those guys do a lot more analyzing on the sideline during the game and spotting these little things and, you know, the meeting that the offensive linemen have when they're off the field on the sideline and they're all sitting around in a chair and they're talking about what happened. you know, it's more important than you think for professional guys, right? There's part of you that thinks, man, these guys all been playing for years. They know what to do. You know, they don't need a coach sitting over there telling them. But clearly it's they're recognizing off the field what the other team is doing and then and relaying that to the players when they're off the field on how we need to make adjustments and what we need to do. And that's a, you know, there's one part of me that hates to make excuses for all of that. It's like, well, we got a truckload of excuses lined up already. You know what I'm saying? But the truth is it's the one significant difference to me between the first week and the last week. You could say, well, you were missing starters. Well, that's true. But where we were missing most of our starters wasn't the biggest problem that we actually had.
Right.
Okay. And so then what is the other thing? Well, you know, we've been displaced. Okay. And yes, that does wear on you more and get older and older as it goes. So did that play a role? Sure. Okay. That may have played a role too. But the coaches is the one big difference that we've never really seen before, right? With the exception of Sean Payton when he got his knee hurt and he wasn't on the sideline.
Okay. That and the year that he was out because of suspension.
The suspension, right.
Yeah. I mean, you talking about two times, like the Saints got their ass handed to him. The week that Sean Payton was out due to the knee injury. Now, again, right. We're not talking about some of these assistant coaches. We're talking about the head coach. So obviously that's going to have a bigger impact. But in addition to what you're talking about, the game day, and I like the analogy that you use when the offensive line all sit in their chairs in a circle. And listen, when you're on the field, it's no different than, you know, when I observe practice, you stand in ground level. You can't see everything. When you are a center or left guard, you can't see the entire field. You don't know everything. And then you're focused on your assignment. You can't see what the right defensive end and outside linebacker are doing. And so right. The coaches are bringing to your attention. But in addition to that, the preparation during the week. Now, this illustration I'm going to use is because after the whooping that we put on Green Bay, it's like you couldn't absorb enough Saints information. And this video came out. And it was very professionally done. And it was from a Packers guy. And I put it in our group. And whether you watch it, but I even said, hey, look, I know y'all probably sick of hearing about the Packers. And I think it was Saturday. So it's like the game's tomorrow. But the guy went over some things that the Saints did to the Packers. And it was intricate things. And I had, and that was just really the thing that my mind went back to after the Panthers game, where you just saw that. Who would be the person to go break down the film and then say to the players, listen, right here is this little thing that is going to prevent a play that Aaron Rodgers makes on a regular basis. Right. And those are the things that I feel like we're missing during the week of preparation. When you have, let's say, Sean Payton dealing with the quarterbacks. And honestly, I can't remember. It was such a mess who was dealing, but Sean Payton's dealing with the quarterbacks. He's doing his job. Right. The quarterbacks, and then in the wide receiver room. And you think that he really had time to pull a receiver aside and say, right here, you need to make sure that this split is not 8 yards. It's got to be 7 yards, because if you don't, then you're bringing, you know, and just right, explaining right. The whole process. And then that week, maybe that kid doesn't always get that right, but that week it was emphasized to him and he got it right.
Right.
And that's why, and I'm with you with, I don't want to hear all the excuses. At some point, listen, the whole next man up, that's such a bullshit thing. I don't care who you are. If you pay Aaron Rodgers, you throw another man in the uniform and Packers and say next man up. Let's see how that where that gets you. So, yeah, you have to have depth. It's part of the game. So you can't act like a couple of injuries. That's part of the game. You have to be able to fill the team when some guys get hurt. But who fields 8 coaches through the game day preparation? I mean, game week preparation, then on game day. Right. I just don't see how, I don't know if that's ever happened before.
Right. Right. And because what you don't realize is, you know, so you say, okay, well, we had problems on offense in this game, right? Well, your head coach is the offensive coordinator, right? He's the head guy and he was available. He wasn't missing for this game. So why do we have so many problems on offense? Well, when Sean Payton speaks into that microphone in front of his face on that headset, there's a lot of stuff that goes in action downstream, right? Everybody hears that call. The wide receiver coach pulls so-and-so wide receiver on the sideline before he runs into the game and says, make sure you're looking at this or you got to do that or remember, you know, there's a whole lot of cascade effects of everybody else that's carrying things out based on what Sean Payton said. Sean Payton still got to be the head coach and pay everything out, attention to everything else in the game. He's not talking to the wide receiver and the running back about he needs to make sure he picks that blitz up, and he's not talking to this guy and that guy. You know, and so that's where you saw, like you said, the during the week was important, but then also those in-game. And I also think that's why, and I'm sure we'll get to this, I think the offensive game plan just looked and stayed so conservative throughout, because I think Sean Payton knew, I can't carry out something complex without all of the people that I know that play the little part in this, you know, as it goes.
Well, you know what? Let's transition into that, because during the game, before I think, okay, I'm saying all these things now, but I'll be the first to admit that I was called out by the group for being negative because I was concerned about some stuff. Having said that, I'm not trying to be negative so much as I'm concerned, but it wasn't until the game started happening and everything that I was really concerned about just all of a sudden, like, just run the ball up the middle. And I'm not one to criticize play calling generally, but it just was so conservative. I don't know when I've seen that. And I know there are some who are saying, well, you know, they're really trying to get Jameis Winston, just ease him into. And I just don't know if I believe that. At the end of the day, Jameis Winston, while he's had his issues in the past, and I do think that you want to run a certain offense and protect him per se, meaning we're not going to throw the ball downfield on every play. I think that he's been around the league long enough where you don't feel like you have to run the ball up the middle of straight handoffs. But transitioning into this, and it may be the – I'm having a hard time blaming the coaches or the missing the coaches and then turn around and start blaming everybody else. But having said that, I just want to set the table to say, I do think that it all boils down to the coaches. Now, do we not have any other problems? No. We have other problems that have been there since preseason. But I think that when you look at the offensive line and their inability to, I mean, not just pick up the blitz, but I'm talking about their free runners, then it's going to cascade to Jameis Winston. And then people want to give him some of the blame, and I get that. They want to give him some blame. But I don't know how many times the man drops back and is literally with instant pressure in his face. Eventually, now, an interesting stat. I don't know if you heard this. 68% of their dropbacks, the Saints dropbacks, they had pressure. Yeah. In the Super Bowl, if you remember, Tampa Bay dismantled Kansas City. And they and Mahomes was under pressure 55%. And this is Mahomes. This is a guy who makes plays no matter what. It's a guy that you throw three guys at him, one dives over him, he jumps over the other one, throws a completion with his left hand, and he still couldn't handle it. 68, I just don't know how you can even go into this and start talking about, well, Winston made some bad decisions. Send a free runner at a quarterback on every single play that he drops back to pass, bad decisions will be made. And quite frankly, I'm going to wait till next week before I start criticizing Winston until they get this cleaned up.
Yeah. And, you know, to follow on with that 68% or whatever, as for, if I've heard correctly, that's the third highest since that stat has been tracked.
Yes.
Okay. So it's the third worst that it's ever been. And so, and that's really where my problem with all this lies, right? The biggest head scratching thing that I have out of this entire game, as bad as it all was the offensive line, you know, and, but I'm in this, on the one hand, I'm like, okay, man, these guys, you know, look, when you call a play, this isn't college where everybody stands up and looks to the sideline after you line up and they got, you know, a picture of George Bush and a lemon and a, you know, and all this, and everybody, and it's like, okay, we've seen a lineup now, this is what your call is, and this is how you block, and, you know, these guys make calls on their own based on the play. They have to recognize this stuff in play while this is going on, right? They don't really get together and talk until after the series is over and they're in those chairs in a circle around there, you know, with the offensive line coach screaming and spitting all over the place and everything. But the bottom line is, it's like, man, what happened with this offensive line? Like, they couldn't do anything. They couldn't pass block. They couldn't run block. And it was guys that you don't even normally see with that problem, right? If it was Pete, or you'd say, okay, or if Ruiz had a bad day, you'd go, well, you know, he's still adjusting, especially moving over to center after playing guard and last year and blah, 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 blah. But when you see Armstead struggling and when you see even Ramchek gave up a little bit, you know, it's like, wait a minute now, hold on. These are guys that never screw up And all of a sudden in this game, they all look horrible.
Well, okay. And so that goes back to, okay. And I listen, I haven't seen all 22. I've watched the game three times now. And the only thing every time I've watched it, and I'm just watching the condensed game, is just Winston drop back and then free runners coming at him. There was one instance where I saw three guys on Armstead's side. And I mean, at that point, all you can really do is just pick the inside guy and hope the quarterback gets rid of the ball before the outside guy gets to him. There was one play I saw, and I don't actually recall seeing it in the game so much as I saw a picture of it on the internet. And it's Ruiz and Pete standing there while three guys are just running through the line unblocked. And I'm at a loss for trying to come up with, I don't want to call excuses, but to give people the reason. I mean, I've watched a lot of film. I've watched film with NFL level people who personnel people. And I'm looking at this and I'm like, I got no clue how they can be. So I heard somebody saying this is now, okay, again, I get aggravated. I'm listening to stuff. I'm reading stuff. And it's like the offensive line was terrible. But now let's talk about how terrible Winston was. I'm having a hard time. We had no coaches. It's no way you can get this done without the coaches. Now let's talk about how bad the offensive line is. And we're talking about an offensive line who has been very good for a long time. Having said that, it's just hard to believe that even without coaching, coaching is important. You telling me that you can't even block a front seven with a blitzer? Yeah. You can't pick that up. And then so the comment I heard was last week we saw Winston do things that Drew Brees could not do anymore. And I agree with that to a degree. And this week what we saw was things that Drew Brees could do that Jameis Winston isn't capable of. Because as much as I'm going to defend Winston because he did not have time, I do think that if Brees is back there, it's better because Brees sees what's coming. Now, look, let's not pretend that Brees has never had a situation where he's just getting roughed up and sacked and hit because they can't pick it all up. So it's not right. Like if Brees is back there, he shifts a guy over and another guy and everybody's in the right spot and he throws his 5-yard pass for a first down. That's just not the case. But there is an example of what made Brees maybe two, some people argue 3 years past his physical prime or being able to do it. Right. Why he still was in the league and still efficient is because he sees all that and he understands all that, because that was a disaster that I just simply cannot explain why it wasn't. I'm not saying there weren't some guys getting beat, because there were, but the stuff that stood out was just free runners just running straight through the line or around the edge and hitting the quarterback.
Yeah. You know, and then there's another aspect that we haven't touched on yet. There was another team on the field, and some of those guys are pretty good, okay? And I remember it was you, I think, that made a comment before the game even started, how you were reading something about somebody said Carolina's defense is so fast.
Yes.
You remember bringing that up?
Yes.
Of course, everybody poo-pooed it, and, you know, they ain't more across this.
All those guys, who they think they are.
And then, of course, they come out in the game, and we saw what we saw, and it's like, okay, well, so there's a little bit to these guys are pretty good and fast on the other side of the ball and all. So they certainly contributed to some of what we saw. But, it's just when it's that – significant, it's hard to look at it and say, okay, look, you know, you take a guy and lose a guy like McCoy, all right, and then so you got to move Ruiz over. Well, right away you go, well, Ruiz played center in college, that's where he should have been anyway, and so he should have handled that fine. And, you know, okay, well, so, and it worked last week, they did it last week, and they look great last week. I got news for you. Sometimes when you're thrown into the fire like that in the middle of a game after a guy gets hurt, you don't have time to think, right?
Well, the defense doesn't have time to game plan to make you look bad.
Exactly. They didn't game plan, and you didn't have time to outthink yourself and get worried about what you're going to do and all right. Now you're going to next week, and you got a whole week to know you the guy, and you got to hold up, right? And you've had plenty of time to think about it, and it's not just Ruiz that's got to move over there and do his job. Now you got an undrafted guy, Throckmorton or whatever. Okay, which I like the guy, and he's got a lot of potential. He played great the week before and all, but my point is, you know, when you cascade these things down the line, you know, you got a guy playing out of position now at center, you got this other guy in a guard, you don't have all of your coaches on the sideline, and this is going on, and that's going on. And, you know, under the best of circumstances, could we hold up with Callaway and little Jordan Humphrey and guys like that at wide receiver, right? But when the fire hits and this guy's got real short period of time to get the ball out of the hand, how many times were they not able to get separation? Or how many times did they not recognize the hot route that they were supposed to recognize? And Jameis Winston took a look, it wasn't there. And of course, he got sacked because the guy, you know, we don't know until you see the all 22. And unless you know the game plan, nobody but the coaches can really tell us how many times it was this guy's fault versus how many times. I guess what I'm trying to say is coming into the season, we were worried about wide receiver. And then all of a sudden Callaway has this great game with Jameis Winston. These two fantastic touchdown receptions. And you go, oh man, this guy, you know, between what he showed last year and how he looks this year. And okay, well, that's different than this guy's going to go out and be your number one wide receiver week in and week out against number one defenses that have game planned all week to play against.
And,
you, right?
And
this
that's
isn't a preseason game. This isn't, you know,
that's vanilla. The key. Some people have brought up that Callaway, he's beating number one corners in preseason. There were two, you know, for both where we played week one, Jacksonville and then in Baltimore, he beat number one defenders. But the key to what you just said is the fact that you beat a number one defender. Can you beat a scheme designed to stop you? Right. You are now the best receiver on the field, and the team's not just going to say, look, just put our guy on him and hope things go the way. No, they're going to say he's the only thing they have that's a threat. Stop him, double this guy. And listen, I agree with you, and I think maybe now that we've kind of established that, I think what we're saying is just it was a disaster, and I opened up the show saying everything just caught up with us.
Yeah.
Having said that, I don't think that the Saints, this is the Saints team you'll see the rest of the year. I think that it depends on matchups. It depends on how quickly we can get some guys back healthy. I heard a couple of people who are saying that McCoy might not be back for several weeks, but I just can't see that. If I'm not mistaken, he never went to IR. So that to me says that he'll be back in the next couple of weeks, or why would they not have put him on IR for 3 weeks?
Right.
So I can't see him being out that long. So there's a little help on the way. I don't know, you know, again, the schedule. Carolina, I thought, would be a tough out. I think they're 500, maybe plus. They definitely offensively a skilled team.
Yeah.
But I think we have to get through these first five or six games, and we have to be somewhere around 500 if when the cavalry comes, all those guys who are either suspended are injured, you know, your Michael Thomases, your Onyemata's, because I feel like based on what I've seen so far, when those guys get back, I mean, this team has a run in them. At least defensively, I'm still, I have my uncertainties about offense, but I think this is a top five defensive unit. I mean, even with the team that we fielded, Carolina has a lot of playmakers.
Yeah.
And we still seem to be pretty effective against them. I mean, but even as injured we are, I mean, at the end of the day, if you don't have an offense that can keep you off the field a little bit, keep you fresh, give you some better field position.
That's the thing, man. That's the thing. I come away from this game and I don't feel all that bad about the defense at all, to be completely honest with you. When you consider the hand that they were playing with the guys they were missing, the amount of time that they were on the field because the offense literally could do nothing. Three and out after three and out after three and out, and these guys are back on the field. You know, even the guys that the perception was, that there's one guy that I'm a little concerned about that it just particularly didn't look good to me, and that was Bond. Okay. After getting excited about the step that I thought he made and everything, you know, we're kind of back in that same place where it's like, oh, you know, Anzalone, but when you see Quan Alexander play and then you put him back in, you go, wow, you know, it's like a big, big difference. So I'm trying not to draw too much of just the perception between the difference between this guy and that guy. But like a Debo, right? A Debo seemingly got beat like a drum all game, but the dude was right there on virtually all of those plays, right? I mean, the guy literally at times, the ball either had to graze his hand or his arm, or something to even get into the receiver. I mean, he was right there for the most part. It's not like he was just trailing guys and way out of the picture. And,
right.
You know, and this is a guy playing in his second game, right? And so, Trufant, you know, another guy, he hadn't been around that long. This is his second game after all. He only joined the team 5 days before the first game or whatever it was. Roby. Now, Roby looked pretty good because they didn't really have to go at Roby a lot, right? It was the old find the weak guy and the other guy that. But all these guys are going to get more acclimated. And then, of course, we got to get Lattimore back. You know, that's a huge.
Yeah, it changes everything.
About all of the guys, I mean, somebody like Lattimore is going to be at the top of the list of people that, like, well, oh, shit, you know, we can't miss that guy or whatever. But I don't feel that bad on defense at all. The icky part was, and even special teams, right? I'll punt her until the very end when he kind of had the shank of the 30-something yard, but he's punting the ball 50-something yards, dropping them on a – looked like Legatron 2.0 big time, right?
Yes.
Early in the game. Harrison gave us a lot of good returns. They were wasted.
Right.
But, I mean, he got the ball out to the 35, the 45-yard, you know. And so, like, the other aspects of the team were working okay. I don't really feel – there are bright spots there, right? Turner, we can talk about him. There are other bright spots that happened at the same time all this bad stuff was happening. But offense, man, between the line – is it just me that Kamara seemed like he never actually ran full out on any play he was involved in? Like,
man, okay, so I've run into this problem before myself. Kamara does have a – just kind of a gliding kind of thing. And, you know, and maybe there's a part of me that's scared to criticize him because I don't want to feel the wrath of Saints Nation. but I've criticized that the way he plays that. And yeah. I shouldn't say that's just how he is. So when it's going well, it works. But when you have that kind of nonchalant, easy glide motion and it's not working, then it seems lazy. The only play that I really have a concern about is that one play where he ran out of bounds a yard short of the first down.
And I guess that's what I'm saying, right? I agree with you that when it doesn't look good, you go, man, the guy shouldn't be wasn't even running hard, you know? And that's how he always plays. And when he goes for 75, everybody's boy.
Yeah, everybody's happy.
Like a gazelle, you know? But that's the play. What he normally is great at is knowing where he needs to get to and getting to that line. And he just literally ran. So my point was that he just – there were a lot of guys that's head just didn't seem in the end of the game. And this has to go back to the coaching issue during the week and all the other stuff.
Okay. I'm going to add to that. Again, I like to go back to my opening thing because I do feel like, boy, and if you take like that first preseason week where we were really negative, we're being that. But there's a lot to be negative about. Having said that, this goes back to my opening statement. Everything caught up with us. So forget about coaching. What about a guy who's been on the road for a month now and been sleeping in a hotel room? And, you know, listen, they say we're going to miss our family. What about the guy stuck in a hotel room with his family and was like, I want to get away from my family. Right.
Yeah.
Oh man, we brought their dogs and we brought their cats and we brought their cousins and they bring their mama-in-law to cook for at what point you think Kamara's locked up in his bedroom in the hotel and like, you know, ain't you going to come eat? You know, no, leave me alone. I ain't eating, you know?
Yeah, you're right.
So the point is, again, all of it, it's not just the coaching. It's the fact that these guys are probably sick of the way things have been going in terms of they're bouncing around from one training facility to the other. Matter of fact, I heard this week that they're leaving for New England, I think today on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So there's another thing. So now you're going to be sitting in a hotel and I back to what I was saying. I wonder if they're like, no, we're going to leave the families back in Texas. The team's going to go to New England on Tuesday and they all cheering. They're all, thank God, man. Yeah. Oh, if I got to take my damn dog out and walk him one more time on the 16th floor, you know?
Yeah, I hear you, man. That's really the only way I can explain it is that, look, you're never as good as your best game or as bad as your worst game. Right? Oh,
come on with the cliches, man.
Yeah, 7 years I've been so. How long we've been doing this crap? I've been saying that same thing over and over, and it's true, right? You know, after 2 weeks, what do we really know? Not much, right? Mm. First week it was so good. It's one of those things where the ball literally, when it bounces right back in your hands and all, everything went exactly right. little did we know a week later, we would see literally the exact opposite almost, where it went as bad as it could possibly go. So where does that leave you? Well, somewhere in between, right? But I still, as bad as that was, and I wouldn't have said this Sunday, you'll notice I haven't even been texting a whole lot over there. I couldn't even bring myself to talk about it. It was so bad. Like, I sat here, the disgust level was so high that I was really, you know, sell it all out. Benson should sell a team. It's over. Just collapse the whole damn thing. But once I get past that phase, and it's like, look, I actually don't come out of this feeling all that bad, right? It's like, when you consider everything going on, I still think this is a good competitive team. I still think they're going to, you know, they got to get past this crap, right? We got to get back home to the city with power in everybody's house and everybody getting back to their routine. We need to play in our building again. We need to practice at our facility again. We need all of the coaches on the sideline and everything. You know, now we can get into a whole other thing about how I feel about the league and sports in general in this world today. And like, we don't even probably really have time to go there, but it's like, just the lunacy and the idiocy of all of it is really that is what's taken away from it more than anything that's happened on the field with me, as I'm having a trouble getting past that part of it. But, you know, and then let's hope the fire to, you know.
Yeah, I heard about that. I saw the fire to the Superdome.
Like, it's like, come on, man, this just can't be for real, right? Like, this shit's got to stop someplace. Hopefully that doesn't cause any more hiccups, because next week, we're finally supposed to actually be home hosting somebody in the Superdome and being back to normal. And you know, we got to get through New England. I don't know how this is going to look. Now, what I don't know is how long were the coaches supposed to be out?
Well, okay. Being someone who just went through a month of dealing with COVID myself, yeah. That's the thing, is as long as they give you two negative tests back to back, they're back on the sidelines. And I'm like, yeah, okay. As long as they don't get hit hard by it. And that's the thing that's lost in this, especially if you, meaning the people listening, are inexperienced in the sense that, well, you know, COVID, okay, you get COVID, you're sick for 10 days, and then you go back to, well, if some of these coaches are, you know, actually sick, if they actually, you know, if they get that pneumonia or they get, then they could be out a month. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, I literally have to pause the show and catch my breath every once in a while if I start talking too much. And so right. Some of these coaches, you know, of the eight coaches who were on the sideline who didn't make, so yeah, they test negative, but are they ready to come back? Are they healthy?
Wasn't even clear. Are they actually sick?
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing, is that
they just contact trace to somebody somewhere down the road that, you know,
well, from my understanding, if I remember this correctly, now with the new procedures, if you're vaccinated, then they don't do the tracing anymore.
Right.
So, okay. And bear with me, I'm no expert on all the procedures or whatever, but it looks like all you have to do is come up with two consecutive negative tests and then you're back in the game. And again, that's assuming that you don't have any symptoms, you know, that you're not actually sick.
Right.
So, yeah, that's a little bit worrisome, but I thought the same thing when I saw that Superdome on fire. I'm like, oh my God, it's going to be, it's going to take 6 weeks to repair the fire damage. But apparently it was pretty isolated and they'll be able to get that up and running. But
yeah, we got blue tarps down to a science in Louisiana.
Oh, man. Yeah, come on, man.
Take a bunch of them, but we'll get them out there.
All right, so I guess we could also watch the New England Jets game, and I don't know any time in history where I've watched the Jets play 2 weeks in a row on purpose. But between watching Carolina play the Jets and then this week watching the Patriots play the Jets, I tell you, I'm sure Wilson will improve a lot, the rookie first round draft pick quarterback for the Jets, but yeah. Three of his four interceptions might as well have been punts. I mean, he's just throwing the ball out there, and then he'll turn around and make a great play, you know, zip the ball in there to somebody 25 yards down the field. But listen, don't let that score in a New England game make you think that somehow or another we're, back in the Super Bowl years of the New England Patriots with Brady and Mac Jones. While I'm sure he's another guy that will be a very good quarterback, and I saw him make some good plays, most of those points were handed to New England by a Jets offense that just was pretty inept. They make plays, but then they turn around and that's the thing, I think, with these super talented rookie quarterbacks, they make some great plays, but then they just make the dumbest plays and it all offsets each other and you can't win like that. But all in all, my general impression is that New England is not some Titan. They're going to play solid football. They have a very good coach, obviously, that just like we use Peyton to as like, oh, well, he's going to correct a lot of Jameis Winston's problems and we'll scheme this and hide that. Well, you get the same thing, you know, with Belichick.
Right.
So you're going to have a good game. You're going to have a good team prepared. Having said that, I don't know. They don't have the playmakers Carolina has. And I think anybody who looks at Carolina and doesn't admit the playmakers that Carolina has is just being a hater or being a Saints fan or fanboy or whatever you want to call it. Carolina has some very good playmakers. And that's going to be a much, that to me, in my opinion, was a harder team to defend than New England will be this weekend. So now, does that change how the Saints are going to play offense? We have some things to correct, but I am convinced while we are not out of the woods, we are not, the problems aren't solved. I do believe that, as I said, again, back to the beginning of the show, we'll still do a show, but there were so many factors that are unmeasurable. We have no coaches to implement the game plan. How do you measure that as opposed to saying, well, our right guard's out and we have to replace him with a, you know, second year guy and he's doing all right. You know, you can measure that. You could say, man, well, we could protect him. But how do you measure all your assistant coaches being out? So I think that we'll see a completely different, I don't know if I'm ready to give them all that much credit. I think we'll see a different offense. I don't think that they'll get as embarrassed as they did, but I still do think that if we don't correct the wide receiver problem, they're going to overload the offensive line and they're going to keep coming after Winston until Winston can prove that he can make them pay for blitzing. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's how I feel.
Now, and that's my question. You know, I haven't gotten to watch the game a second time, much less a third or fourth. And I also obviously haven't seen like the all 22. What I'm wondering is, you know, if Jameis Winston doesn't have much time, then neither do the receivers, right? In other words, these things are happening in tandem. So it's not like the receivers get a head start and they start running a route and then the quarterback takes a snap and you go, oh, man, these guys ain't getting no supper, right? In other words, if they tackle Jameis Winston in 1.5 seconds, the receiver didn't have a chance to get out of his break yet and start to create the opening that, you know. And so one thing can make the other look bad and vice versa. In other words, you know, the guys ain't getting open, they can make the quarterback look bad. If the quarterback don't have time, that can make the wide receivers look like they can't beat anybody and so on and so forth. So I don't really know. I think you put up something that there's some hope that maybe the receivers aren't as bad as it might have seemed. Didn't you put up a picture on WhatsApp or whatever, or something about –
The picture that I had put up was Jameis Winston's first interception before halftime. If he wasn't being tackled, he had Harris running. I mean, it was a touchdown. I mean, he was running wide open past the defensive backs. That was the picture that I sent.
Right. And I have a feeling we'd see that, right? If it wouldn't have been for the fact that he had three people on him in a half a second, there would have been, you know, there was a guy open and it would have been an opportunity to throw the ball. Also, now the counter to that, you know, the wide receivers didn't do a whole hell of a lot in the first game either, you know, with the exception of a long pass to Harris. You had a lot of Juwan Johnson because he's a mismatch. Did he even play this week? I don't recall ever even seeing him in a game. Did he even play at all this week or not?
I wouldn't be able to tell you. I don't have the snap counts.
But the bottom line is that, you know, again, you know, Callaway, when the lights have come on, the guys had like one catch in each game maybe or whatever. And so you go, well, is that, you know, is he just really not good enough? Or is it, you know, I don't know. I guess it goes back to I don't think you can tell a whole lot from this game. I just, you know,
completely
it's hard
agree
to
with
sit
you.
Here, right. You know, it's like we're trying to pick certain aspects and go, well, you know, man, so many things went wrong. And I think we got to kind of just, this is one of those ones you got to forget it. Let it roll off your back and move on to the next one. And, you know, because I just don't think you really know anything. And unfortunately, because of the way the first game went, I don't think we really know a whole lot there either, other than to say, I think we know when we're at full strength, our defense can be really good.
Yes, 100%.
And I think when they can protect Jameis Winston, he's shown that he can make smart decisions and be efficient. And you know, when he doesn't have to try to do it all. We had a running game in that first game, right? And I think the Saints were trying to establish that this time. It obviously didn't work out that way. So then you don't give him time to pass and you take away the running game. And well, you see what you got left on offense after that. So, well, hopefully we'll be able to tell more after the New England game. What I'm really hoping right now is just that we get some guys back. I'm hoping that Lattimore is not out for an extended period of time. I'm hoping that, well, we know we're going to be without Kwan and
CeeDee Deuce is another guy that you know, could be back this week.
CJG, you know, we had guys at every level that were missing. We had two defensive linemen with Davenport, and we need to talk about Passano because obviously he's playing a bigger role than what a lot of people probably thought. He was kind of that forgotten guy, you know.
Yeah, when we signed him, I was like, okay, looks like a guy who had potential, but Kansas City gave up on him. And in that first game, he was wrecking stuff. I mean, he was disruptive. So, that was an important loss. I mean, you know, again, you're looking back to you already down on the depth chart, and we were going into the season talking about we don't have the depth that we've had in the past. And now all of a sudden, you know, you're losing Passano, you're losing a starter in Davenport. But, you know, we keep going all over the place. And I this is with just me and you here. I like more of a conversation. It's I'm enjoying it. Uh-huh. But you glossed over like Peyton Turner, a sack, five tackles, three tackles for losses. You talking about an outstanding performance from a guy who was a healthy scratch in week one. Now, healthy scratch, not because he can't play, but because the Saints actually have some depth at defensive end. But I don't think you'll see him as a healthy scratch anymore. I think that there's going to be a lot more snaps for him. I mean, not only did he do well passing, rushing the passer, one play in particular where he just got up under a guard and just blew a play up. And that was the thing, is as big as he is, they were saying that, you know, he's not a great run defender yet. And it's like, okay, well, I saw quickness. I saw a lot to like. You mentioned Adebo. And yeah, I do feel like he got picked on early and gave up some plays. But when you think about years past, when you talk about giving up plays, you're talking about a guy running with a 3-yard head start or, you know, 3-yard cushion, catching the ball and his safety's tackling him. With Adebo, he's right there in a lot of instances. Yeah. And made some solid tackles. They did go after him, but when you look at the rest of the team, you say, okay, who are we going after? And you're going after the rookie. And so until he can prove that, you know, listen, don't come at me. But I don't think that's ever going to happen when Marshawn Lattimore is on the other side of the field. So he's going to be the guy that you're watching all the time. He's going to be the guy that's going to have to make plays. And so far, I am not disappointed in what I've seen, because if we got a little bit more pressure, then you'd see a little bit, you know, maybe the throw's not quite as accurate. You can defend it, you know? So there were some good things, but quite frankly, they were all on defense. And so I think what it is we'll see, and we'll find out more this week in New England about what the offense is all about, because what we saw in Green Bay, I don't know if that's sustainable. I don't even know if the Saints offense is built to just power run the ball like they're Tennessee.
Right.
So they go in there and they run the ball. They're effective. And I think they can be effective running the ball. I just don't know if they're a team that just runs the ball 2 out of 3 down.
No.
But I think we'll find out in New England that, you know, you make a good point. Like, listen, our receivers, not top of the league. Having said that, can they get open? Can they make plays? Can they catch the ball? I think in a lot of instances they can, but the offensive line is going to have to tighten up. And I think that all boils down to quarterbacking. And as much as I'm like, hey, we missed all this time, I want to do a show. This show to me, this review to me, is about the most useless review, because we're sitting here talking about if this guy doesn't do this and then that guy. And offensively, I mean, listen, let's get our coaches back, implement a game plan the way it should be done. And if this happens against New England, then we can pull the alarm, right? To me now, it's just one of those things where you're like, good Lord, man, I've never seen something that bad. And until you can see all the factors, but as I use the word unmeasurable, you don't know how to measure missing all your coaches and implementing the game plan the way you're supposed to.
So, I think we do now.
Yeah. Well, we,
you know, listen, yeah, I think we do now.
Yes.
I don't pay attention to other teams in the same way, but has this really happened to any other team before this point?
I've never heard anything like this. Never. Yeah. I mean, I've heard of offensive coordinators getting sick. I've heard of people missing, never multiple coaches missing a game.
Even during the whole COVID thing, I don't recall ever hearing of another team having eight coaches missing.
Honestly, the worst thing that I can recall was the, and maybe because it affected us, is the Denver quarterback room, all of them gone. The Saints running back room, gone, everybody. Yeah. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe you can make an argument. I'm sure anybody could. But what's more important, losing all your coaches or, like, let's say what happened to the – now, not quarterback. Let's just talk about the Saints and say, look, we're going to bring a guy off the practice squad to be our starting running back because we lost all of our running backs. So injury aside, meaning the one guy you brought in, he has to stay healthy for the game. What's more important, all those running backs going away and you playing with a practice squad guy, or all your coaches going away? And to me, I don't know if I would have probably made the argument like, listen, man, if you got a guy like Alvin Kamara, you know, that's a difference maker. But after what I saw Sunday, I would say that I probably greatly underestimated how important coaches are to implementing the game plan. Talking about the small, little things, the detail things. I mean, think about a head coach in a meeting. He's not talking about, you know, the whole team sitting there in the auditorium. He's not talking about 7 yards from the hash. You know, he's talking about, fellas, we got to find a way to be dig down deep. And, you know, it's the assistant coaches who are like, you ain't going to win like that. You know, watch Hard Knocks. Watch those guys talk about, you want to make this team 7 yards ain't 8 yards, son. You know what I'm saying? Right. And it's like, that's the guy pointing out the little things that are the difference between a successful play and a play that fails.
Yeah. And there was a good example during the game, speaking of Adebo and Moose Johnson or whatever, the commentator actually brought this up, was that, you know, it's hard to defend a guy like DJ Moore when he's going to run that little 2 yards, turn in, plant on a dime and run back out for a really fast guy like that. That is hard for any defensive back in the league to cover. But when he showed him lining up, right, what Adebo did wrong was he didn't shade to the inside. Leverage. Just a little bit, right? That more experienced guy or the defensive coach on the sideline that looked at the review of that play and said, hey, Paulson, next time you run that play, you lined up, head up, you got to be half a step inside or whatever.
Yeah.
Take that little inside move away from, right? And so it can happen to anybody, including veterans. Veterans don't make all the plays exactly right. They don't run all the routes perfectly. They don't run. But especially when you have some young guys, and it's just going to be amplified that, hey, you know, that coaching that's constantly going on early in those guys' career during a game, you didn't have the benefit of that either. And so there's just too many factors in this game, that in the end, my absolute almost insistence on not making excuses for what happened with this team. You can't ignore it all. It's too much. No. And I think you saw the out of character things that you saw with this team that just don't happen under a Sean Payton coach team is one of the things that points to that difference of the coaches and just the total of all of the circumstances, right?
If we struggled in the offensive line all the time and we didn't have so much invested, then I would be like, you know, man, listen, until we get our offensive line fixed, this kind of stuff's going to happen. But honestly, you know, listen, people get beat. Teron Armstead's an amazing player. He gets beat sometimes these guys are a good unit. Now, look, we have individuals who fail sometimes, but as a unit, it's a top 10, if not better than that unit. Like, you know, I want to say top 5 unit. Yeah. And I just don't think that you could sit there and say, when somebody just completely falls apart, they suck all of a sudden. It gets me in the preseason when people watch preseason games and they're ready to write off like, you know, Cam Jordan.
Yeah.
Because he didn't make any plays. And what ironically, he ended up getting cut. But I look at running back that we end up sending to Baltimore. I say sending, but we cut him. Murray's over there and they're, oh man, he's not making play. I mean, the dude got like 6 carries in preseason. You know what the guy can do. You seriously trying to tell me it's not like he's coming off injury? Anyway, having said that, I guess you can argue I was wrong because they ended up cutting him. But I think it had a lot more to do with salary cap than it did with performance. It did.
Especially once we, go ahead.
I'm just simply saying that you can't just all of a sudden one, and I get it. It's a, what have you done for me lately league, but I'm sorry. It ain't that lately. You cannot tell me all of a sudden the offensive line just went horrible. You know what I'm saying?
No,
not to mention we played last week. And while the Packers, now the difference between Packers defense and Carolina, Packers are used to playing with a lead and they're not big run defenders. Carolina's a better run defense team, which cascaded one problem, you know, it made another problem look worse. Right. Where the Packers, and I watched the Packers Monday night, Detroit ran all over them. So at the end of the day, as long as we're going up against teams that don't stop the run, then things will look better. You start getting up against teams that stop the run, then you might start seeing these kind of problems. Hopefully not to this degree, but you could still see these kind of problems.
Yep.
Well, I tell you what, we just kind of rambled on here for, I don't know how long it's been. Maybe it's been close to an hour. Do you have any final thoughts?
No, my final thoughts is just wondering how, you know, hopefully the coaches all get back and weren't actually sick and, you know, and then the players, right? I mean, we know we're going to be out without Davenport and Quan because they were put on IR for 3 weeks. But these other guys, Lattimore and
McCoy.
Massino and who you said?
I said McCoy.
Yeah, McCoy and C.D. Deuce and, you know, these kind of guys that went out this week. Hopefully those guys are back next week and the coaches are back and we get at least some, even though we're still on the road and everything, at least get most of the normalcy back of these other things that we had to deal with. And let's see what they look like, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you. Again, I'm going to just reiterate what I said at the top of the show is I just think everything just kind of caught up with them. Everything from, you know, relocation, hurricane, coaches being out, injuries. And so, I'm not ready at all to panic, even if the Saints don't play well this weekend against New England. Now, I'm not considering that they'll play as poorly offensively as they did against Carolina. As long as they play solid, I'm still going to think to myself, there's tons of room and time for them to come together and make a run. And when I say a run, I think that this is a wild card team. So the point is that they have to get healthy. They have to get their players back and then just hope that you don't get another COVID outbreak in the coaching staff. And I'm kind of joking because I guess I don't expect that to ever happen again. That was kind of like your bad luck. But, I mean, look how much bad luck in the last month. But, you know, hope that you don't get something like that in one of your player rooms. You know, you don't get it in the running back room or the defensive line. Well. And so as long as, you know, we don't see these abnormal things that nobody else is dealing with, it goes back to the excuse thing. You know, when people use injuries as excuses, I don't care for that much. It's like, listen, it's a game of attrition. You better have depth because guys will get hurt and will miss time, period. It's part of the game. But, you know, tell me the other teams that had their whole coaching staff out, you know, maybe not entire, but more than half of their coaching staff out. Right. That doesn't happen. That's one of those things that you just say, you know, same thing with last year in Denver, you know, like that's an excuse. I'm sorry. All of our quarterbacks are out. We're going to play a wide receiver at quarterback. That's an excuse, man. Let's hear it. Matter of fact, you don't usually hear the national guys say this, but I heard on Monday, Good Morning Football, and one of them said it and several agreed that kind of what I'm saying here is that when all this stuff, you know, listen, overcoming all this was just too much. And they all kind of agreed, like they all kind of gave him like a pass. Now, I don't think the NFL is going to give us our loss back.
No.
But I think people agree that there just comes a point when, how do you overcome all this? I mean, we sit at home, we go to work all week. And on a Sunday, we get ready to watch the game. We pop our beer, get some chips. We don't realize these guys they've been dealing with garbage all week long. And we don't even really take that into consideration. Just, the offensive line can't block. And Winston, he needs to make better decisions. And, the receiver, you know, so let's see what happens when they get back to a little bit of normalcy.
Right.
Which, unfortunately, is not going to happen until after New England. So,
Well, you know, I look at it, you know, between the injuries, the coaches, and being displaced, that's three major factors. if we can kind of get two of them mostly corrected before the New England game, it should look better. And even if they come out of it with a loss on the road, still under, you know, mm-hmm. but I won't feel so bad. Now, if they come out and look like they look this week, then
we have to revisit some stuff.
I make no promises about which condition I'm going to be in after that. But the bottom line is right now, like I said, I'm not panicking. I still think this is going to be a good team. They just got to get back to full strength and, you know, and get back. They got to get back home. They got to get back in their beds. They got to get back to their practice facility on their weight machines, on their practice field.
Just all that
the normal things that you would do. They got to get back in their own building to host a ball game in front of a bunch of fans and everything. You know what I'm saying? And
yep.
I think all of that stuff will start to cure the ills, you know.
All right. Well, anyway, I think that's about all of the rambling that we'll do this week. Anyway, for Heath Elson-Son, I'm Dave Romero. You've been listening to the BS and Beer podcast, and we will talk to you next week.
And anyway, the person who sits here is but the most conspicuous member of a superb team of journalists, writers, reporters, editors, producers, and none of that will change. Furthermore, I'm not going away. I'll be back.
And that's the way it is.
Why don't waste time to tune into our podcast? Oh, go give your time to Davey, Heath, and Thomas. We do this every week, every Wednesday. So don't miss, we do this every week, every Wednesday. So don't miss. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Oh, we have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Ooh.